You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Eurythmy as Visible Speech, Collected Works, Volume 279, translated by Vera and Judy Compton Burnett. This is Lecture 10 of 15 lectures, and there are some appendices after that. And this one's entitled, Movements Arising Out of the Being of Man. Up to this point, we have, at least to some extent, derived the eurythmic gestures from the actual sounds of speech. Now, we must realize that everything which may be expressed through the medium of these gestures, and which is, therefore, in a certain sense, the revelation of man himself, just as the spoken word is also a revelation of man himself, we must realize that all this is based upon the possibilities of form and movement inherent in the human organism. For this reason, we may choose yet another starting point. We may, that is to say, take the nature of man himself and develop from this the various possibilities of form and movement. We may see what manner of movement can proceed out of the human organism, and then, carrying this further, we may eventually discover how the individual movement can take on the character of the visible sound. Today, in the first place, we will take our start from the actual being of man, and we will endeavor to discover the forms and movements which may arise in this way. Then, proceeding somewhat further, we shall ask ourselves which sound is to be regarded as related to this or that particular movement. For this purpose, I shall need quite a number of eurythmists, and I will therefore ask them to come onto the stage. Will you place yourselves in a circle in such a way as to have equal distance between each point? Number one, raise both arms upward, the palms of the hands turned outward, and all the fingers widely spread. Number two, hold the right arm closely to the body, the left hand being lightly supported against the side. Number three, both arms stretched forward, the one laid over the other. Number four, the arms held to the sides, the left arm at some distance from the body. Number five, one foot placed forward, the left hand grasping the right elbow. Number six, close the left hand into a fist and place it against the forehead. With the other hand, which is held more in a forward direction, make this gesture. Number seven, both hands forward, the left hand below, the right hand above. Number eight, stand with the weight on the left foot, holding the right foot slightly raised, the right hand upward in a vertical position, and the left arm bent somewhat sideways. Number nine, bend the head forward and downward, touching the chin with the right hand, and allowing the left hand to hang at the side. Number ten, clasp the right arm over the head, covering the larynx with the left hand. Number 11, place the feet so that they are turned inward and cross the arms. Number 12, left arm placed against the breast, the right arm against the back. Here you see a series of gestures. These gestures in their totality represent the entire human being. The human being split up, as it were, into 12 separate elements, but still the entire human being. Readers aside, there are a number of pages of diagrams of this, and of readers aside. You might also imagine these gestures being carried out by a single person, one after the other. If you picture them being made one after the other by the same person, you would see still more clearly how in this way, when one individual makes all the movements, the whole being of man is revealed and expressed with a quite remarkable force and clarity. Let us now pass through these several aspects of the human being. We will begin here with gesture 4. Try to imagine that we here have represented that element in the human being which we call the intellect, the mind. We must realize that this gesture is the expression of the understanding, the intellect. Let me say again, number four is the arms held to the sides, the left arm at some distance from the body, and a reader's aside. Now let us look at this gesture, number one. From this gesture there streams out with a sunny radiance that element which may be described as enthusiasm, which has its source in the breast. Thus we may say gesture four, the head, gesture one, the breast, enthusiasm. Now let us pass to this point, gesture 10. So let me read those again. Gesture 4, which he says has to do with the mind, is the arms held to the sides, the left arm at some distance from the body. And then gesture 1, raise both arms upward, the palms of the hands turned outward, and all the fingers widely spread. That's for enthusiasm. Now let us pass to this point, gesture 10. And let me read gesture 10. Readers aside. Clasp the right arm over the head, covering the larynx with the left hand. And now let us pass to this point, gesture 10. Here the head is enfolded by the right arm, while the left hand covers the larynx. In this gesture, we have represented that part of the human being which is the expression of the will. The word is silenced. We have man as the representative of the will, of all that can lead to action, to deed. Thus we may say the limb system, will, deed. Fundamentally speaking, we now really have before us the threefold organism of human nature, understanding, feeling, will. Then we still have that gesture which synthesizes all these elements in itself. You can see how here in this gesture there is the striving after balance. Gesture 7, and gesture 7's description, again, readers aside, is both hands forward, the left hand below, the right hand above. A state of balance is sought between these various aspects. One may imagine that the arms move in this way, parenthesis with an upward and downward movement, close parenthesis, and that by this means one is endeavoring to experience this state of balance. Here we feel the whole human being seeking to obtain equilibrium. It is the representation of the human being who finds the perfect balance between his three forces, thinking, feeling, and will. I will only write, quote, the human being in a state of balance, close quote. You must take these descriptions, which I am writing here, as matters of the greatest significance. Now, we will go one stage further. When you pass over from the thinking human being to the human being as he seeks for equilibrium, you have, lying between these two aspects, that element which follows after thought, which is the consequence of thinking. Where does thinking lead us? To resolve. Thus, gesture 5, readers aside, description, one foot placed forward, the left hand grasping the right elbow. Thus gesture 5 is the resolve, the thought which wishes to transfer itself into reality, resolve. Now we reach this point, gesture 6, readers aside, close the left hand into a fist and place it against the forehead. With the other hand, which is held more in a forward direction, make this gesture. Now we reach this point, gesture 6. We see from the very nature of this gesture that something exceedingly significant lies here. This gesture, 4, represents thought. Thought may be very clever, but it does not necessarily enter into reality. It does not necessarily reach the point of resolve. Here we have thought. But thought may always miscarry when it comes to a question of external matters. At this point, gesture 6, thought struggles with the conditions of the outer world, the bringing of thought into connection with the external world. German, aus Einandersetzung des Gedankens mit der Welt. This connection of thought with the outer world, must actually become part of the complete human being. For the man who has reached a state of balance can, as he goes his way through the world, only bring his deeds to fulfillment when he has first entered into a relationship with the outer world. And now, starting from the understanding, we will take the other direction. What really happens before one formulates a thought? Something must lead over to the state of understanding. Before a thought is actually formulated, we have the state of hypothesis. We have a weighing, as it were, of the pros and cons of the matter. Thus, here in this gesture, gesture 3, readers aside, both arms stretched forward, the one laid over the other. Thus here in this gesture, gesture 3, you see the weighing process in its relation to thought. But how does this weighing, balancing process come about? In this connection, we must make an accurate study of gesture 2. Readers aside, gesture 2. Hold the right arm closely to the body, the left hand being lightly supported against the side. What lies behind this gesture? You will remember that we take as our starting point feeling, enthusiasm, gesture 1. This is a burning enthusiasm, the enthusiasm which we lack so greatly in our society, but which at least is represented here. Now, passing from gesture 1 to gesture 3, before we reach that quiet feeling of weighing or balancing, a reasonable soberness must first make its appearance. Gesture 2, soberness. You will be able to feel this quite easily if you enter into the gesture correctly and without prejudice. We have then that enthusiasm has its seat in the breast, gesture 1. Now we come to this point, gesture 12. Readers aside, gesture 12, left arm placed against the breast, the right arm against the back. Here we have not yet reached enthusiasm. Rather, let us say, enthusiasm does not, on this side, pass over into a weighing, thoughtful process. It passes over into action, into the expression of will. On the path from enthusiasm to will, we find the first stage to be initiative, the going out of oneself, the impulse toward action. Enthusiasm burns with a fire which cannot endure. But when an action is to be accomplished, there must be initiative. There must be the impulse toward action. Here then, gesture 12, we see the impulse toward action. Now, we must pass still further. Let us observe the next stage. Here the whole human being is filled with the conviction that he will succeed in accomplishing the action. Gesture 11, which is, described again, readers aside, place the feet so that they are turned inward, and cross the arms. We can almost see Napoleon before us. Special attention, too, must here be paid to the dexterity of the legs and feet. The eurythmist must not stand as in the other positions, but with a firm hold on the ground. You will notice that admirals on board ship always stand in this way. Parenthesis, and let me here advise you, when you are on a ship, always to walk in this way, then you will not so easily feel the motion of the vessel, nor so easily become seasick. This, then, is not merely initiative, but it is the capacity for action. Here we have already reached the capacity for action. And now, with gesture 10, we have the action itself. And readers aside, gesture 10 is clasp the right arm over the head, covering the larynx with the left hand. Then we go one stage further. When the action has been accomplished, what has been brought about by its means in the world outside man? We see the human being living in the world. He observes what has been brought about through his action. It is no longer a question of the action only. The human being has already passed beyond this. He can observe it. Action has already become event, an event which has been brought about by his action, by his deed. Thus, in gesture 9, we have the event and description, readers aside, of Gesture 9 is bend the head forward and downward, touching the chin with the right hand, and allowing the left hand to hang at the side. End of Reader's Aside. And now we pass on to Gesture 8. Reader's Aside, stand with the weight on the left foot, holding the right foot slightly raised, the right hand upward in a vertical position, and the left arm bent somewhat sideways. End of Reader's Aside. In this gesture, you can see that the event has made its impression upon the human being. He has caused something to happen, and this happening has left its impression upon him. It has become destiny. Thus we may say, event has become destiny. In this circle, then, we have the human being divided up into his component elements. We can picture this human being as containing within himself 12 elements, and we can also discover the 12 corresponding gestures. And now, I need 7 more eurythmists. Let us start here in the center. Stretch out the arms, the right arm forward, the left arm backward. And now you must move both arms simultaneously in a circular direction. Parenthesis, you need, however, only actually make this gesture when all the others have been told what to do. Close parenthesis. With this first gesture, which I have described, we have no longer merely the gesture which is held, but one which is in movement. And when we take this gesture, this movement, we find that it is the expression of the human being in his entirety. Now, the second, left arm backward, right arm forward. You must move the left arm in a circle, the right arm remaining quiescent. Here we have shown you the second movement. It is the expression for all the loving, sacrificing qualities in the human being. Thus, the human being in his aspect of loving sacrifice. Now comes the third movement. Right arm forward, left arm backward, the right arm moving in a circle. This is the extreme opposite of the preceding movement. It is the antithesis of the loving, sacrificing qualities. This is the aspect of egoism. The fourth, stretch out the arms in front of you, with the lower arms crossed one above the other. This gesture is in the sphere of the spiritual. For this reason, it may remain quiescent. Here we have everything in the human being which is creative. It is the capacity for creation. Now, we come to the fifth. You must hold the arms forward with the fingers drawn inward, and the movement is made by means of a rocking of the body upward and downward. This represents the aggressive quality in a human being, thus the aggressive element. The sixth, you must hold the left arm still, bent inward, while the right makes a circular movement around it. In this way we show clearly that we are not now expressing the aggressive element, but the activity arising out of wisdom. And now we have the last movement. Here the hands are placed against the forehead, the one somewhat over the other. Now allow them to move slowly up and down, and again up and down. Make this gesture, this movement. Here we have the expression of everything which is most profound, the contemplative, meditative element. The human being is here turned in upon himself. I will describe it as a deep contemplation, tiefsinn. Thus we have formed a large circle and also a small circle. In the outer and larger circle, we have the 12 outer gestures which are static, which express form. Here in the inner circle we have 7 figures which express movement, with one exception, that is to say. This gesture expresses a different aspect, namely movement which is brought to quiescence. Now you will soon see what an harmonious effect is produced when all these postures and gestures are combined. Those in the inner circle carry out the movements belonging to them, while those in the outer circle take up their postures. We must, however, go still further. Those in the inner circle make their movements. The outer figures move slowly in a circle from left to right, always holding their postures. During the whole time, the others also must make their movements. Here, you see, it is as though the human being were observing the world from all sides, and bringing all his faculties and capacities into movement. Will you once again take up your postures and form the outer circle? I must just mention that in Eurythmy, the direction from left to right is really reversed. That is to say, it is taken from the point of view of the audience. This also applies to the direction from right to left. The outer circle moves at a moderate pace from left to right. Those in the inner circle, still making their gestures, move round somewhat more rapidly. Thus the inner circle dances round at a rapid pace. The outer circle dances round more slowly. Now add all the movements and gestures. See what a harmonious effect is produced. This is one possibility. Here we have a first attempt at drawing forth from the organism its inherent possibilities of movement and gesture. And we can do this when, at the same time, we bear in mind the human being in his entirety. And we can indeed see how in the future further possibilities of form and movement will gradually be able to develop from out of this element. In very truth, the human being has not grown up simply from those forces known and recognized by present-day science. He has grown up out of the whole cosmos, and his nature may only be understood when the whole cosmos is taken into consideration. When we have taken all that we have just seen, and really observe it closely, then we may say that we have before us the human being divided up into all his different faculties, into the various qualities and forces of his being. But in the outer world, the human being is always divided up into the various members of his being. This is to be seen in the animals. The human being bears within him all the faculties of the principal animals. These are gathered together in him, synthesized, and raised to a higher level. Thus we have, in the first place, the four main animal types. Here we have enthusiasm, the breast element, Leo, the lion. The lion has as its dominant characteristic what we have here in this, its corresponding gesture, 1. Further, here, gesture 10, is that element which is manifested in the outer world in everything standing under the sign of external action, under the sign of the will, Taurus, the bull. Then, here, gesture 7, you have that which seeks to blend in the human being as a whole all the elements of experience, of action. You saw this in the way the movement was shown. Here we have that which welds together all the separated qualities, just as the etheric body welds together all the different members of the physical body. At one time, the etheric man was also called the water man. Here one really ought to write, the etheric man. According to ancient designation, however, this is also the water man. So here I may justifiably write, Aquarius, the water man. You now know that this signifies the etheric man. Then we have the fascinating quality of cleverness, of brains, that which creates an impression, gesture 4. And it is just here that tradition has brought about a gross error. In reality, this has to do with all that is connected with the innermost organization of the head. So that I ought really to write the eagle. This confusion between the eagle and the scorpion seems, however, only to have arisen in comparatively recent times. Here, then, we must picture the eagle, and there's a diagram. But everywhere today we shall find this sign designated as Scorpio. Parenthesis, I do not necessarily mean to imply that people have gradually learned to regard the understanding as something which stings them. Close parenthesis. Now we have here the four main characteristics of the human being. The others lie in the intervening spaces. Enthusiasm does not immediately pass over into action. Something lies between. At this point we have initiative, gesture 12. This impulse which leads us over into it from enthusiasm to activity, which takes us out of ourselves, is incorporated in the feeling system, in that part of the human being which is enclosed by the ribs. In the ancient language of physiology, this part of the organism was designated as the crab. here. Also, then, I may call this point Cancer, the crab. In the zoology of earlier times, the word crab did not merely signify that animal which we today call a crab. It signified all those animals possessing a specially strongly developed rib organization. This is what was originally meant by the word crab. Everything which had a special development of the ribs was a crab. Now, when the human being wishes to pass over into the sphere of action, he must be able to move properly. He must bring both sides of his organism into a properly balanced movement. Thus, the element of left and right in the human being must be brought into action in a harmonious manner. Here we must observe that type of animal which is so organized that it has continually to bring the left and right sides of its organism into a synthetic and harmonious movement. Some animals, when walking or running, have to do this to a very marked degree. Gemini, the twins, gesture 11. As I said, from here we pass on to the action, and from the action to the event. When we examine this transition from the action to the event, we find in the animal kingdom that it is best symbolized by those animals having curved horns. This brings us to the event Aries, the ram, gesture 9. Naturally, I should have to speak at considerable length if I wished fully to justify this statement. Then we go further and reach the point where the human being is merged in the external world, where he gives himself up to the external world. We come to the point where his action becomes destiny. Here the human being lives in the moral element, as the fish lives in water. As the fish is merged in the water in which it swims, almost becoming one with it, so does the human being live with his destiny in a moral outer world. Thus, Pisces, the fish, gesture 8. Now, I have already said that one must find a gradual transition from enthusiasm to quiet thought. We find this transition when the burning enthusiasm becomes sobered. The cooling element, that element which has not yet caught fire, when embodied in the animal kingdom, was called in ancient times Virgo, gesture 2. And after this soberness comes the quiet weighing process, the balancing, Libra, the balances. Those animals which seem to consider everything were in the dim past designated as the balances. Now we pass from gesture 4 to gesture 7, from Scorpio, or more properly, the eagle, to Aquarius, to the etheric man. First, we have the resolve, where thought determines to make itself felt in the outer world. It is easy to see why certain animals which dart from place to place from a certain nervousness of disposition, as for instance, certain woodland animals, it is easy to see why in ancient times such animals were named archers. This is something different from what was later supposed. It is simply a characteristic of certain animals. Sagittarius, the archer, gesture 5, see diagram. Parenthesis, today even, I believe that in certain dialects the expression Schütze, archers, is used for those wretched little insects which dart about in the kitchen regions. Close parenthesis. And now we come to the bringing of thought into relationship with the world. At this stage where one butts at everything, where one has not yet achieved the blending of all the human qualities, nor reached as yet the sphere of destiny, at this stage we have the goat. Thus here I must write gesture 6, Capricorn, the goat. Man in his entirety is summed up in the circle of the zodiac. But all this must be regarded as expressing human qualities and faculties. And these human qualities, again, make their appearance in the postures we have been studying. Now, in the inner circle, we have had the expression of the human being as a whole, sun. Next, we passed over to the human being in his aspect of loving sacrifice, Venus. Then to the more egotistical aspect, Mercury. to the creative, productive aspect, Moon, to the aggressive aspect, Mars, and then to the aspect of wisdom in the human being, that which radiates wisdom, Jupiter. And finally, we have that which passes over into a certain melancholy, into an inner contemplation, into a profound inwardness, Saturn. As we enter the sphere which reveals the human being to us in the way I have just described, we pass over from the postures which are held to the gestures which are in movement. And if we now wish to synthesize all this, to gather it together into a single whole, we can do so in the way I have shown you, by bringing the circle into movement. By so doing, we externalize all that which together makes up the complete human being. That is to say, the synthesis of all the certain animal qualities, the animal characteristics. A certain experiment is given in the, quote, color teaching, close quote, of Goethe. Here, one paints a disc in sections according to the seven colors, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet, etc. Then one brings the whole thing into movement, whirling it ever faster and faster until the whole impression is gray. The physicists assert white, it is, however, not white, but gray. The separate colors can no longer be distinguished. Everything appears as gray. Now, if the eurythmists had moved with such rapidity that the separate gestures were no more to be seen, but all were whirled together into a whole, then you would have seen something of extraordinary interest. The picture of the human being expressed through his own movements. Here in the inner planetary circle you have all those qualities in the human being which tend outward, those possibilities of inner activity whereby the animal nature is gradually led over into the human. Thus in the outer circle we have all the animals as man. And here in the inner circle we have a synthesis of the animal qualities transmuted into the human by means of the sevenfold planetary influence. And now I must ask you, the details I shall give you next time, to bear in mind the sounds. A, A, E, O, U, I, Au, seven vowels. When we take the consonants really according to their innermost nature, grouping those letters together which are somewhat similar in sound, we get the 12 consonants. Thus we have 12 consonants and 7 vowels. We arrive at the 19 possibilities of sound when we see the consonantal element in the zodiac and the vowel element in the moving circle of the planets. This is the language of the heavens. Whenever a planet stands between two signs of the zodiac, in reality a vowel is standing between two consonants. The constellations arising through the motions of the planets are indeed a heavenly utterance, which sounds forth with infinite variety. And that which is here uttered is the being of man. Small wonder, then, that in the possibilities of gesture and movement, the cosmos itself is brought to expression. Such thoughts as these enable us to realize that in Eurythmy we are really reviving the temple dancing of the ancient mysteries, the reflection of the dance of the stars, the reflection of the utterances of the gods in heaven to human beings below upon the earth. It is only necessary, by means of spiritual perception, to find, once again in our age, the possibility of discovering the inner meaning of the gestures in question. Today, then, we have discovered 19 gestures, 12 static and 7 permeated with movement, of which latter one is quiescent only because rest is the antithesis of movement. In the moon we have movement annulled by its very velocity. Thus we have learned to know these gestures, and I have also been able to indicate how they lead over into the realm of sound. Here we have taken the human being as our starting point and have traveled the opposite path. Previously we started from the sounds. Now we take our start from the possibilities of movement and follow this path till it leads to man, to a visible language, to the sounds themselves. the end of Lecture 10.